nature doesn't know science, right? Like nature is just nature. Science is us trying to understand nature. You get what I'm saying? And what I mean by that too, as well, it's like, you know, science is a go, well, according to the laws of geology, I need to do this. No. Like, we are making observations about what's happening, what God has already created. And we're trying to understand the complexities of that.
The Talking Shop podcast, long time coming, Joey Cunha, not Cuna. Welcome to the pod. How are you doing today? And tell me something good that's going on in your life.
Man, no, I love it. Appreciate it. First off, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it. And also appreciate your energy, how fired up you are. Man, God is good, bro. He's just, you know what I'm saying, continues to provide some different opportunities and things in our life and all to around our team. Like, I love just seeing like how he's moving through all their lives and the opportunities and things that they have and what he's doing just with all of our players and everything else. So I think that would be my what's going on, some cool things that are happening. So.
Fantastic. So on TSP, sharing stories, lessons, and experiences in sports performance and professional development. So nothing about hitting too specific today, but there's just something about your stuff. And I'm interested if you can figure out what TikTok I'm talking about. The first one I came across of yours. Well, first, he's the co-founder and CEO of The Farm System. He has a bunch of products, courses, the farm board, stuff like that, as well as a MLB hitting consultant, which I'm interested, we'll get to later, about kind of like what that entails as a freelancer, basically. Out of Vegas, cool. But it was one of your eighth grade softballers, and she was doing some water bag stuff, the farm board, forward and backwards walking, and it was just like, that just makes sense. Like, there's so much counter rotation. Me coming from like a speed sprinting background, you know, everything from the core, hips and whatnot, and even if you just jump up for a vertical pin touch with your left hand while your right foot's going to kick out, right? That's just how everything, and it just like made so much sense. And ever since then, like every post of yours, I just get it. You know, like, I'd been thinking about a water bag, but you pushed me over the edge to buy one and stuff and whatnot. So, if you know which TikTok I'm talking about, I think she was maybe in like light gray, I want to say.
Yeah.
Lefty.
Yeah, I know. It's pink. Yeah. She's really good. Yeah. She's one of our really good players. That was actually a older post that we put back out again, because it got, again, the same with it, like, got so many people grabbed to it and pulled to it. And just to see her going through her training is pretty good. She's a phenomenal athlete.
Yeah, just the progression of the drills, and it all made a bunch of sense to me. So kind of before we get into it, that's kind of what brought me to you and then us to here now. So kind of let's go back to the beginning. Kind of, where'd you go to school, your playing background, some of your biggest kind of mentors and stops along the way, what kind of set the frame of kind of your lens in which you do all this stuff, the biggest stops along the way?
Yeah, I have to hit the spark notes. I feel like I'm getting old now. There's so many stops. Originally I, you know, grew up in North Las Vegas, here as well. Family, you know, didn't grow up with a bunch of money. Lived down the street from Cheyenne High School, if anybody here locally or knows about Vegas. Not the greatest, you know, like high school. Also, too, there was a lot of crime. There's a lot of drug use. There's a lot of other things, you know, that happened just around that area, just me growing up. My brother was actually a gang member, been shot multiple times. Like, again, kind of give you the aura of like kind of my life that I grew up in. My mom, kind of like, I was 10 years younger than all of my, well, my oldest sibling. And so, along with it, I kind of came after them. And so she kind of like handpicked the schools that I went through. And she just gave me like one cut above like every school that my brothers and sisters went to. It wasn't the best school, but it was a little bit better than the school that was down the street. And so I think that played a big part. Just again, getting around some different voices, different ideas, like perspectives from that was huge. When I got to high school, I got to actually go to a technical institute, which was actually cool. I got to play for my local high school. So I did play for Cheyenne, but I went to a technical high school, which we had program areas, like alternative fuels was the one that I was actually in my program area, which was basically like automotive, but like with some futuristic, you know, like we were building like electric little motorized cars and like using solar panels and doing some cool stuff. So that was kind of fun. Kind of got, you know, some of the science stuff started, you know, clicking for me.
Do you see that coming back? And then also the mocap and that kind of computer with the 17 monitors and whatnot that you have.
Yeah.
Do you see those connections?
Yeah. So like science was definitely a big part of my life. Just like growing up, I was always really interested in science. So that was huge for me there. And then out of high school, when I was a sophomore, this is one of my major stops. When I was a sophomore in high school, there's this baseball academy here in town called On Deck Baseball Academy. And so when I went in there, I went and got a lesson from Mike Easler. So if you don't remember him, he was the hit man back in the day, right? He played like, 15 or 17 years in the bigs. And then also too, the hitting coach afterwards had like Matt Kemp in like AA. He had, he also too had Pujols, I think his rookie year. And also he was like Mo Vaughn's like main guy when he went over to like the Red Sox, like back in the day. So he was in there like training guys. And so I went in there and we put all our coins together for my family. And I went and had this one lesson, right? And I was like, I want the magical pixie dust, make me a really good baseball player. And so after I got done with the lesson, I realized how far away I actually was of like how much better I needed to get, and that one lesson wasn't going to be it for me. I wish it was that easy. Yeah, I wish it was that easy.
I wish my golf game was like that.
Same. My golf game's rough, by the way. In any case, I went in there, and so I was like, man, we can't afford to do any more lessons. Like, there's, I'm just kind of stuck here, right? So what I did is I went to the guy that owned the facility, and I'm like, look, dude, like, I'll clean your bathrooms, I'll catch your bullpens, like, I'll do whatever we need to do, just like let me hang out, basically. So Andy Concepcion owned that place. He actually ended up, his niece is actually my best friend. I met her there. She's actually my director of ops now. She's in a couple offices away from me right now. And so that's how we originally met, and we've had a friendship ever since then. But like, with that as well, like that was a major piece of my life, because that led me into just getting around a bunch of pro guys, getting in that atmosphere, how they thought, how they process information, what made them really high performers. And so that really, that helped me a lot. And also, the high school I was zoned for, their college going to, I guess you would say, not graduation rate, but their rate at which those kids would go to college. I don't know the exact, title for that. But in any case, it was like only like, I think it was something like 7% or something like that.
Wow.
And then my prep school, the tech academy that I went to, that one was like 70%, like everybody went. So it was like dramatically different. Yeah. Right. And so no one in my family had ever gone to college, graduated, all those other things too. So I was the first one in my family to do that. I was scared, didn't know how I'd get money for this. I didn't think I could afford it, all these things. And so I got to be around a lot of people and a lot of other parents that could kind of educate me on that process. So I ended up going to, wasn't recruited, wasn't very good, like had to work for everything basically the whole way. I, at the academy, was hitting there one day in front of these junior college coaches from California. They liked me, like, hey, do you want to come play for us? But you got to pay to come play. And I'm like, yeah, like, because, JUCOs. So I went up there. Ended up playing there for 3 years because I broke my hand 1 year, had to have surgery. Was there, College of the Siskiyous, for 3 years. It's up in Weed, California, about 45 minutes from Oregon. I mean, like, super Northern California. Like, like, basically Oregon, right? So I'm like, really up there. I went from Vegas, millions and millions of people, to a town that had less than 3,000 people when college was in session. So
culture
it was
shock.
Like, yeah, culture shock dramatically. Also too, just a big transition in the world at that time, baseball as well. We went from having those old, Besser bats, like, to go the BB Corps.
I have one in my trunk right now.
Yeah, man. Those BB Corps bats the first year were just awful, if you don't remember. And then I just went from Vegas, where everybody was throwing.
Well, as
super
a PO,
hard.
It was good for me, but.
Yeah, I get you. Yeah, no, for sure. It was terrible. The first year of hitting in college. And then also, like, the air was dense, because it's just, again, like, the air was too fresh out there. Too many trees right next to a national forest. The center field came to a point. It was like 420 something feet for like a homer to center field.
Jeez.
It was tough. But anyways, my third year, I got recruited. I had to go play at the University of Arkansas at Pine Bluff. So it's mid-major D1. That was always my dream, to play Division I. So I debated between that and some high-level D2s that were kind of talking to me. And the coach got me, and he was like, man, he's like, I thought you were a D1 athlete. That's why I was recruiting you. And I'm like, you're right, I am a D1 athlete. So, like,
if you say so. Signing,
if you say so. So went there. We got hit with some NCAA regulations for our football team, where they banned us from playoffs. And they also too, and we were back to back conference champs. So it was like, that was tough. And then they banned us from playoffs. And then they cut all of our scholarships. So we all transferred. Then I transferred from there. I transferred from there over to Sterling College, which is the NAIA that was ranked in the like 20th at the time in the nation. We ended up finishing fifth that year, went to the World Series. It was a great experience. Adrian Dinkle and those guys over there. Coach James over at Pine Bluff, want to give him also a shout too. Great guy. But Adrian Dinkle, who's now over at Southeastern, which, you know, Southeastern is, they've been winning all the national titles and all that stuff too. He was, you know, again, just a great coach, great recruiter, all those other things as well. I got to go there. And then from that, I ended up tearing my shoulder when I was at Pine Bluff. I had no idea. I was a two-way, by the way. I played third and also pitched and bounced around utility a little bit. Yeah. I was just a competitor.
Just an athlete.
I don't know about all that, but one of my one plus tool, I would say, is like, I had a pretty good arm. So like, again, I got on the mound, I caught when I was young. On the mound, you know, I had a pretty good cutter and a curveball that I couldn't throw for a strike, but I just threw it real hard and people swung at it. So it was always in the dirt almost every time I threw it. That was, you know, kind of big there. And then, when I tore my shoulder, I kind of player coached my last year at Sterling College. They ended up taking me to the World Series on the roster as a coach. So nice. That was cool. Yeah. Super, super awesome. I was doing charts all year, and that's when I really got into doing hitting. When I took over, I don't know if your guys' team had this, but, you know, we had the pitch tendency chart, right? Mm-hmm. And I would do, you know, okay, hey, in this count, they're throwing this and X, Y, and Z. So I'd be going up to our hitters and they're like, hey, man, 2-0, this guy throws a changeup. He loves throwing his changeup 2-0, right? And it's like, or things like that, right? And we'd set mm-hmm. them up. And then, you know, at one point, Adrian had this meeting inside the dugout, and he asked the team, he was like, hey, like, you know, this is the time of year where everybody starts pouting and yada, yada. You know, he's like, I just want you guys to raise your hand if Joey's like helped you this year with hitting. And like the whole dugout like raised their hands. And I was like a really humbling moment for me. And it was like from that point forward, like the team just like kind of glued. And then they'd be having me like, Coach Dingle come to me and be like, yo, like the boys have been like, you know, we were playing terrible or whatever. And he was like, hey, pull the boys together. And so like, we would, you know, I would talk to the team and like, you know, here I am, the bench guy, you know, getting everybody else fired up and, you know, getting them like, hey, we're laying off this guy's killing us with this changeup, like make him, like, you know, force him up in the zone. Anything starts mid thigh, we're not swinging, all these things. And meanwhile, I'm the guy like on the bench. So yeah. it was an interesting thing how that developed. And then, from there though, I got offered a, job, I was interning at the time, for my degree. I was interning at Planet Fitness. And they offered me the general manager job, and I had torn my shoulder that year and, you know, all those things. So I was just like, man, like, all right, I'm gonna take this GM job. So I took the GM job. Then I became the regional. Then I got promoted out to Texas. And then I had the second most profitable region in the world. The first most profitable region in the world, a shout out to my COO currently. It was Drell. Drell was our regional over there. And so we just, it sounds good, but it was just a lot of work, right? Our franchise was growing a lot. I really like literally during that 2 year span, I watched like no baseball. Like I was completely out of baseball. Like I had wanted nothing to do with it. I was also, I felt like I was a little resentful, just like, you know, I've been training and I kept getting hurt, and they're, you know, like again, NCAA hit us. It's like, and I was one of those, you know, guys that is like training with. Yeah, I was salty for sure. And so that those 2 years I needed a break. And then, you know, God called me back. So we, the same thing. I actually, the guy that owned my baseball academy back in the day that I told you about when I was a sophomore, he took a coaching job out in Utah as a high school baseball coach. And then he asked me, you know, a year prior, he was like, hey, do you want to come be my assistant baseball coach? And I'm like, dude, like high school baseball coaches make nothing. Assistant high school baseball coaches make absolutely nothing. And I'm like, man, I'm about to be a director over here. I'm in like, my whole family's been like blue collar their whole lives. I have this white collar job making good money. I'm about to be, you know, I'm about to be a director, like all these other things. Like, you know, why would I ever leave to go be a high school baseball coach? So then, a year later, God was just pulling on my heart. And, I called him after a service one Sunday. It's a whole nother thing. Testimony story, a different time. But, in any case, I called him and I said, hey, you remember that job that you offered me? Like, I want to take that job. And so, I didn't have any money put away. It was like a leap of faith, for sure. And went over there, coached with him for about a year. While I was there, I got connected with, cause I was in, it's in, out right outside of Salt Lake. It was in Sandy, in Utah, like it's like right like a suburb of Salt Lake City. There, the Salt Lake Bees, which is the AAA team for the Angels, they had their coach there was Donnie Ecker, who is now the Rangers, bench coach, is one of the highest paid hitting coaches in all the MLB. And I got connected with him, started shadowing with him, started asking him, hey, can I write reports on some of your hitters and you tell me what I'm missing?
Wow.
And so I started kind of doing that there, right? And that's kind of starting with some of that, you know, consulting, also learning from Donnie, one of the best in business. And then I got offered a couple of jobs over at 108 Performance out in Southern California at the time. Eugene, after every time he came back with a bigger offer and a bigger position with the company. And the third time he finally got me, you know, season was finally over. I told him I didn't want to leave our boys in the middle of the year. He offered me at the end of the year. So I went over there, was our director of business development and also our director of hitting. And then, so I took on there, Eugene was a major mentor that helped me a lot. We're like viewing the swing and the body through some different lenses. Then kind of just stacked my knowledge on top of his knowledge too, and just grew from there, and just like my work ethic and some of those things as well from there. Then I was there for about 2 years. I was interviewing for some hitting coordinator jobs inside the MLB. Justin Stone, the Cubs director of hitting, circled back with me because he had interviewed me as a hitting coordinator for a hitting coordinator role. And he said, hey man, like the organization decided that, you know, this year I'm actually going to play dual role. I'm going to be the director of hitting and I'm also going to be the hitting coordinator. And next year we're going to bring in a hitting coordinator. But, you know, with that being said, like, I want to hire you at our facility, because he has a bunch of facilities out in Chicago that the Cubs pay to consult for the Cubs. And so anyways, he was like, hey, I want you to come on and consult for the Cubs, where again, you know, with our drafts, with our trades, with our, you know, players that are struggling, right? Like you work in those areas. And also to be the director of hitting at our facility. We currently don't have one, but, and then the next year I want to bring you in as our hitting coordinator.
That's cool.
The following year. So, and then also, yeah, he doubled my salary from 108. So I'm like, all right, well, like,
say I'm out of here, man. Yeah.
I got 108 like 4 months. I kind of prepared them for me to leave. We hired some other people. The month that I went to go leave, COVID hit. My whole family's from Vegas. I was about to move across the country. I hadn't lived home in 10 years, basically, since I left for college. And so I was like, all right, I'm going to go home for a couple of weeks, you know, 2 weeks, and then everything will be over. Everything will be great. It was 2 weeks, a month, 3 months, 6 months, right? And then I basically, at that point, we had an investor come on board. We ended up getting the facility. We ended up doing all that stuff. Then Justin, a couple months later, you know, circled back to me. He's like, hey man, like, we're ready to bring you on now, like all this other stuff. And I'm like, man, like, I, you know, I already laid up shop, and like, you know, now the farm's going. So in any case, we've been here now. We've been open about a little over two years, I think now, here locally in Vegas. And so here we are. Yeah.
Very, very cool. So there's three things that stuck out to me that I want to briefly touch on, and then we'll get into it. So I think the first thing is that people come back, and that's one of those things where it's like, if you told me that, I don't know, 5 years ago, I just roll my eyes, but like, you truly, truly never know. And the story I always have is like freshman orientation, for whatever reason, I chose like the hard teacher for like exercise science 101. It was like the easy one, Dr. Mayhew, and the hard one, Dr. Bird. And I just took Dr. Bird every chance I could. And long story short, that was full ride TCU 4 years later, and then et cetera, et cetera. But people always come back. Is all you need is an opportunity, you know, and big time players make big time plays. I'll leave it at that. And then last is you just got to put yourself out there, you know, like you just asking for more work and more opportunities. And that was me with TCU Beach. I had class with the GA strength coach, and I was like, hey, I could probably do two teams, because I was chatting with Zach Dakin. I was doing some things with football and baseball. And then for whatever reason, she took me up on my offer and was like, yeah, let's meet with the coaches. I already talked to them. Let's meet next week. And then I was like traveling with the team, did my thesis, got it published, just because for whatever reason, I just like put that out there. So those three things stuck out to me in your journey. So next, I guess we'll get to your current kind of role. What is the coolest, craziest story? So like one you just couldn't even make up if you tried. You know, whether it's people rolling through or you traveling somewhere, or like, I don't even know what it could be, but I see you have one.
It, just because we talked about it the other day, and it is like one of our craziest ones, is so ABCA every year, you know, we go out there and we got the ABCA. Well, I think it was when it was back in Chicago, so 2 years ago now, we were going out to Chicago, and there was a crazy storm that was happening at the time across the country, and Southwest kept canceling all the flights. And so we had already purchased our booth. We already had everything set up, all our product. Like we had invested like over $9,000 or whatever, like already into going to this thing. Right. Plus we also had our flights and all these things. And then last minute, Southwest cancels our flight, and they had canceled everybody else's all the weeks prior, but ours was literally like within 48 hours of us leaving, like boom, they canceled us. It might've been, actually it might've been 24 hours before we're leaving. They canceled us. So I looked around the office, and we're all just sitting here that night. And I'm like, you know, what are we going to do? So I looked it up. I got us an SUV. The only way that we can make it there on time is we needed to drive 24 hours straight. And again, through the mountains, through the Rockies, through like with all of our stuff, right? All of our whole staff was like just riders. We all got in this truck. We left after work. We all ran home, took a shower, got our stuff together, put it in the truck. Started driving across the country, and we just rotated drivers. Like me and Cody just bounced back and forth. He would sleep, then I would sleep. And then, you know, somebody else would be up with the driver. And we drove, I think, 26 hours straight across the country through two blizzards. And we got there on time. I remember getting there with like no sleep, immediately went into a presentation that I had already committed to. And everybody's like, how are you awake right now? Cause we like documented and like made updates along the whole way. And like everybody was following us on social media. And so it was cool. People were like coming up. It's like, man, like it's so crazy. You guys did it. Like, you know, all that stuff. And we got to fly back. We didn't have to drive back. So it was great. yeah, that was just a crazy just story. Like it's crazy that it happened. It probably wasn't the smartest thing, but also at the same time, it's just like, we didn't have many options and like, we just made it happen. So it was like, it was a fun time. I'm excited to, you know, get back to ABCA this year too.
That's so Midwest of you just driving everywhere.
Hey, when I was a regional, I traveled at least 9 hours a week, and I was always traveling. Like you had one central location, and then you had, you know, you had to go to all your different gyms, and like, so to go to all those gyms, you just had to drive a lot. So I'm used to driving a lot. And yeah, our whole staff is just riders, and they were ready to go. So we made it happen.
What was your staff's like first reaction when you proposed that?
Let's go.
Yeah. No questions asked.
Literally, I peeked in Cody's office, and I was like, hey, like, I think, you know, like I was thinking about maybe we get an SUV and like we leave. And then he was just like, let me know when. Like,
say less.
Is this what we're going to do? Like, yeah. I mean, I also feel like with that, it's like, that's the relationship, like the people that we have on staff, but also too, like, they're just ready to ride with me. Like wherever, you know, I want to go or whatever we want to do or all those things, like, you know, again, like the staff's ready to do it. So like, they're just, yeah, I got a great team for sure.
Awesome. And then last thing, road trip, you get one snack and one drink at a gas station. What are you snagging?
Ooh, I love, I probably, if I had to get one drink, it'd probably be, I'm going to get nasty here. I mean, it's either going to get a Dr. Pepper or Mountain Dew. Those are like my go-to sodas.
Two solid choices.
Yeah, two solid choices. Mountain Dew is like if I really need a rush, you know what I'm saying? Like if I need to get it going. And then also too, I love like gummy candy that's like sour. So any type of like, so for example, like even if you take like, some people think like Gushers, but I like the Gushers that are sour, you know, like any type of sour, like straws or like taffies or anything like that, like gummy stuff is like my stuff. That's all my business. So anything like that is my favorite.
So any of your athletes listening that wants to surprise Coach Joey, just take notes.
No, they do. It's so funny. They'll bring me stuff or they'll bring me gift cards or something like that. I'm also a big Dutch fan. I don't know if you guys have Dutch Bros out there, but yeah. So we got Dutch Bros out here. It's a coffee, a big coffee place. And like, I love Dutch Bros. They have an energy drink there that I crush. And so in any case, yeah, that they always, you know, hook me up.
Fantastic. So last kind of big question. Now your business and kind of how everything came to be. But I feel like a big origin story and question that might not always get asked is why the farm system? How did that name come to be?
Yeah. So originally, when we started the farm, me and my buddy, we played college ball together at Sterling. And we were kind of thinking about picking a name for the, we were originally just a podcast, right? Like Literally, we started with two $15 mics from Anton, and we're like, he basically was like, yo, I think we should do a podcast. I think people would listen to us. And I'm like, okay. Like, so we got our first like 20 downloads or 50 downloads. And I'm like,
we made it.
Awesome. We made it. Right. And then all of a sudden it was like 200 downloads. And I'm like, oh, like on that pod, on that episode. And it's like, then we just kept going. And then it's like, you know, now I think, you know, too, like we've had over like 200,000 listens and like all the, you know, all these other things that we've done now. And obviously it's grown so much, but the thought with the farm system is the, you know, like the minor league systems for baseball, they call it the farm system, and it's all about development. And that's what we wanted to do, is like talk about a lot of player development and like, you know, just baseball in that realm. And like, it just got us going when it came into like just getting better. Cause that was like both of our stories, was we weren't very good and then we got better, you know? And again, like we didn't have it. Cause it was like this thing at the time where it's like, you either have it or you don't. And that's kind of how people thought about baseball, where like, it's like, I always believe in like, you didn't have it and now you do. Right. Mm-hmm. And so like that development story is like literally my whole life has been my story. And so because of that, like, that's a big passion for me and how to get there. And I know that you had another question tagged with that, but originally I just wanted to go right at the farm system. What was your other question that you wanted me to touch on?
Yeah. So basically just when was that first light bulb moment? So basically my understanding of kind of your philosophy in the farm system is basically counter rotation, or the scissor kick. Now that's more of a byproduct of what you do with your core, but basically your upper and lower half work reciprocally to create that forward momentum. Right. So when was that first like teacher man hitting, you know, like he just stared at like a bunch of videos of guys hitting and then he got the coil and all that stuff. So like, how did you discover, was it just like your best hitters did the scissor? Like, how did just that idea kind of come to you, your first light bulb of like, oh, there's something about this kind of rotation and hips and all that.
No, great question. Yeah. So I think originally, definitely for sure. And again, not that Eugene wasn't the first person ever to like see a scissor, right? Like we were not the first, you know, company ever or to train or even, you know, come up with any of those concepts. I think we just, again, like throughout generations, we stack on top of one another and we stand on each other's like shoulders. Mm-hmm. And I think the same thing, like Eugene had made some really big leaps and bounds of like understanding these things. And he saw the kickback as not a bad thing, where a lot of people at the time were trying to coach players out of it because they didn't understand like your foot working back behind you. Why would that add any power? That would not, you know, that would not be a good thing. Right. And so in any case, he was, you know, big on it, that it was a good thing. And like, he understood reciprocal movement, which again, like he helped me understand too, as well. And then I just feel like, me being the science and kind of the nerd side, I wanted to figure out physiology. I wanted to figure out from an anatomy standpoint, from a biomechanics standpoint, and start learning more from that. And again, we also had a biomechanist out there that was like huge for us of learning about a lot of these things as well. So Emily Faree, she also does a lot of NFL players now. She was our biomechanist over at Movement First. And it was right down the street from us, and we would take players over there, and then we would go through them. We would tell her what we were seeing, and then she would connect it with the anatomy side and the biomechanics side, and we would have these really good conversations. And then, you know, over the years, again, along with that, it's just going deeper and deeper of like patterns and shapes and things that I was seeing with my eyes, and going like, yeah, but I feel like there's a difference between this and this, and I feel like there's a difference between that and that. And then Emily would be like, yeah, you're actually talking about this, and you're actually talking about that. And then, you know, again, and I'm also like, I've read more books outside of college than I ever did inside of college. Like, oh, I mean, sure. I got a library, you know, like I got a textbook library just sitting over here inside my office, just about, you know, again, all of these, you know, kinesiology and skill acquisition and biomechanics and, you know, again, also kinematics within sport, like within specific skills like hitting or cricket or, you know, all these things that I'll get into that it's like, you know, I'm super nerd on that side. And I love to read about all that stuff at night. And so, yeah, that's a big thing for me. And then as we went like deeper and deeper, and then we started getting force plates, and we have all these things like in-house, our ability to measure kinematics ourselves. We didn't have to go to, you know, a lab. I can just do all these things in real time players. And also too, most biomechanics labs are set up to not for hitting. They're, you know, like it's like golf or gait analysis, or, you know, again, you're not supposed to be hitting a moving ball that's flying through the air, hitting it against, you know, $500,000 system that, you know, you could break, or, you know, you're inside of a PT facility, kind of like, you know, where it was set up in most labs. So that was really cool. When we started getting that stuff in-house, when I got this location out here in Vegas, we kind of stacked all that information and understanding ground force on top of all that. And then also you know, just kind of connecting all those dots. And I feel like also, and you know, just from my experience too, just like God also like helping me connect those dots from like knowledge to wisdom of training thousands and thousands of athletes, that like you start to, you know, weave, and there's a picture that kind of comes in the mind. And one of the ways that I like to describe it is it's kind of like nature, right? Like nature doesn't know science, right? Like nature is just nature. Science is us trying to understand nature. You get what I'm saying? And what I mean by that too, as well, it's like, you know, science doesn't go, well, according to the laws of geology, I need to do this. No. Like we are making observations about what's happening, exists, what God has already created. And we're trying to understand the complexities of that. And so when people paint science as, well, it's science. Well, science is the reasoning of science is we believe this to be true. Here's the theory, until that theory no longer holds up underneath, you know, these circumstances or whatever. And then we figure out that, oh, here's this new theory. Like, you know, back in the day, it was science that cigarettes were healthy for you. You know, it's like, okay, you got to remember, like, you know, again, we stack and we learn more, you know, over time. And also too, what's funding all the science. Yeah. All these things that we can get into. But in any case, I think that those were just, you know, bigger things of, you know, like me understanding that is, as a coach, I'm trying to see nature or movement, and then also understanding or power. Okay, that guy hit that ball really hard, but it's not how I view the swing. I don't know how he's hitting the ball that hard or why he's being so successful with that technique. And then when you go in there and you make a theory and then you test it, and then is that actually true? And you look into the, you know, again, how does the body actually work? How does it actually create force? How do, you know, physiology, understanding like lines of tension, where muscles are running, what that muscle's responsible for, co-contractions, CNS systems. Like, you know, you start getting into all the nerd stuff and you start going and you start building all these things over time. And I feel like it just gives you a bigger perspective on, instead of looking at, we try to put nature into all these subcategories of all these different sciences. Like, again, like I talked about, biomechanics is its own study in science. Kinesiology is its own study in science. Is there overlap? Yes. But they also, there's guys that are kinesiology majors and guys that are biomechanical majors. There's guys that are skill acquisition majors. There's guys that are, you know, coaching majors, right? There's guys that are psychology majors. And like all of that comes together for an athlete. And again, as a coach, I want to have all of those aspects, right? And try to mix all of that together, which then creates a philosophy of how we're training and going about with our players, as seeing it all from all of those lenses, which then creates one large lens to kind of see all of movement through, if that makes sense.
Yeah. What was the first, and side note, super, super interesting kind of soundbite about the science and the nature, where the scientific method is just like a systematic way to ask questions to describe what's happening until it gets proven wrong, you know? And like no one has ever said like, hey, kick out your right foot when you reach with your left hand when you jump, you know, just to go back to that example. But sure. So what was that first moment of, whether like how did you develop the farm board maps? You just like stood on some plastic and swung, or like I think that's a very interesting piece of equipment.
No, for sure. So where that actually started with was we were studying hockey players. So what we noticed with hockey players is everybody that shoots a slap shot, all of their legs go behind them. Like there's not a single guy that shoots a slap shot where their back foot doesn't go behind them. So then we started thinking about that from a skill acquisition lens, and we're going, there has to be something going on with the surface, because there's no reason, like, why is it only in hockey where every single person that does a slap shot, their leg goes behind them? Why is that? I'm curious. So what we did was Eugene ordered a big slide board that was for hockey. Right. And then we brought it into the weight room, and we were throwing like med balls and things on the board. And I really liked what was going on. So then one day I just grabbed it, dragged it into the hitting room. And I told all the hitters, like, no cues, no nothing. We're throwing you the ball, just hit. Right. And then all of a sudden, every single one of them, bow, 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 move was happening every time. The moves were so clean. Everything was amazing, right? And I'm like, okay, at the time, I didn't understand with the depth why it was working, like we talked about, right? I had theories, and I'm just like, okay, so So then we went down the route. It's like, okay, but this big slide board is like hundreds of dollars. I think it was like $300. I'm like, it's way out of price range for everybody. You know, also too, like, who's going to hit on these slide boards? Like, they're not going to like risk that much money, you know, even though we see crazy amount of benefits from it, right? So then it started with, before the max, it started with that we call them the OG farm boards now, like the little small individual farm boards. And so what happened was we, I was actually going to Home Depot looking at different materials. This is funny because it was years ago. I was looking at all these different plastics because certain plastics were way too slippery. Like, it was too much, right? It actually made the main focus on like being balanced.
Not dying.
Like not moving. Right. Not dying. It's like, no, we need a little bit of instability, but we also need, you know, like, we want it to be challenging, but like not crazy off the end. So we were looking at all these different type of plastics. And we came across, all the samples were about this big, right? Like, they're about the size of a farm board. Yeah. And so we looked at them and I was like, do we need a whole big surface, or do we just need something to go underneath the foot? Mm-hmm. And then boom, that started that idea. Right. And then it was, we started doing like the individual boards. And then actually this last year, when we came out with the Farm Board Max, what happened was I was training a pro guy. And I was like explaining to him, when I was understanding ground force more, and I was looking at our force plate data and what our best hitters were doing and what our other players were not doing. And we were looking at those. It was like, man, like you know, you got to have that feeling of screwing. Like, if you could take the whole ground and screw the ground back to the catcher, right? As you're rotating, like, that's the feel I want you to have. And so, and I was like, well, you know, the boards, because they're individual, you know, you could, it's harder to get them to get that sensation, because they, you know, when you swing, they can just go opposite directions rather than them being connected like a force couple, if you know, you know, like biomechanic stuff, right? But it's like, again, like that each foot was kind of doing like an equal opposite, and they're going the opposing direction. So we actually came up with, like, man, I wonder if we just had one big connected board, right? And we've talked about it, like, we've done it different times where, like, we'd put guys on like wood, and then there would be like a balance point in the middle, and then the whole wood would like spin back. Like, let's say you put two by fours on top of each other and like across, and you stood on the top one. When you swing, right, like, it would cause the bottom one to spin back the opposite direction. And so then, you know, birth came to the max. We ordered a couple the test. We did it with some of our pro guys, and they're like, oh my God, like, this is this feel that I've really needed. Like, it you know, wakes all these things up for me. It makes so much sense. I'm rotating against the ground. This is what I feel like when I'm crushing, you know, all these things. And then boom. And then we came out with it and like released it from there. But that was kind of like the origin story, though, of how it came to be, for sure.
Very, very cool. And then who was the first athlete, whether it was 13-year-old little Johnny or whether it was a pro guy, that like went from like zero to hero, like the first kind of biggest transformation story?
I feel like the one that's like really big right now is, I would say we had Paul Skeens. So we had Paul Skeens at 108. When he first came in, people don't know this, but he's a really good hitter. Like, he's nasty. So we got him, he was there at 108 before I got there. He was like, came in like when he was in eighth grade, and he shot up, like, grew a foot, was super skinny, like no weight on him. Like, he just, like, you know, this kid, and he's a catcher at the time. And, you know, he just matured and kind of grew into his frame a little bit more. And, you know, Paul was there every single day, right? That, like, every day we were open, we had a membership. It wasn't like lessons. Like, he came in every single day. He would hit, he would work out. Catch bullpens for a lot of these guys. And so we developed, like, hitting wise, like, every once in a while I'll post a video of him hitting, just like remind people. I'm like, he hit at Air Force, and he was a good hitter at Air Force. Then he went to LSU, hit for them during the fall, but then, you know, pitching, he was so over the top. But I think this is funny, though, is I remember the day he walked in the other room and was like, hey, I think I want to, like, our team needs a pitcher. Like, I think I want to pitch. Right. And he did it when he was younger, but, like, you know, he hadn't thrown a long time, and he had a really good arm behind the plate. So he jumps on the mound first day, hasn't really pitched, jumps on the mound and throws 92. It's like, all right, like a high school, you know, like junior, I think he was at the time. And it's like, oh, like, all right, like, you know, you could throw a little bit. And so, it, you know, in the very beginning, it was like, he had like a two pitch mix. He would like spot start, you know, some of those other things too. But then, like, you know, hitting wise, like, you know, again, like, he got recruited because he was a catcher that could stroke. And so pitching was kind of just like a plus. And then all of a sudden, you know, obviously, you get up throwing 99 and, you know, plus and all that stuff. It's a different story. But yeah, like Paul was literally this little skinny, like, you know, like wasn't like was very uncoordinated, was, you know, just his body grew dramatically. And then, you know, now obviously being like number one pick and all the things, and also too, just like phenomenal, like great family, like just captain mentality. Like he was the captain of our facility. Like it just on the same note of that, like that's definitely, you know, a kid that was just like, wow. Like, you know, again, like those, you know, those talents like that don't happen very often. So I feel like I can't not talk about him, you know?
Yeah. It's interesting. Like does the player make the coach, or does the coach make the player? Like some guys are just born to just be studs, you know?
Yeah, for sure. But, yeah. So no, I think definitely with, you know, him there as well, right? Like, you know, I think the biggest things is as well as like you said, is like he had a lot of that mentality stuff and a lot of those things going as well. But yeah, I mean, the kid works really hard. I think if anything, like majority of that is all his working. And like, yeah, like we guided him and we put him, you know, on a really good path and all those things too. But also too, to be honest with you, he put more time, for my opinion, he put so much time into hitting. Right. We did, you know, like even with it, I'm like almost sad sometimes. I'm like, why don't you get the hit, man? Like, we put so much time into him hitting and his movement quality and all that stuff from the hitting side, and pitching like really took off. But at the same time, along with that, like, it's just funny, like, you know, the mindset that he had from hitting and like all the work he did, I think applying that over, into pitching, you know, getting along with it and like good for him. And, you know, again, text him all the time and just tell him, you know, how proud I am of him and, all those things. But yeah, no, a phenomenal kid.
Very cool. Last question. I guess this will be a little X's and O's, but just while heavy here, as I was a PO, I won't say what I topped out at, but how much do you think? So I see the connection to sprinting because obviously the hips and the shoulders kind of rotate and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah.
How much of the hitting development with Paul do you think transferred to his ability to rotate and throw, / do you have any thing for pitchers? Do you think like there's value in the farm boards, the forwards, backwards walking? Like, where's the connection? Because there's truth to everything, you know?
Yep.
And then what you do is in the middle, right? There's extremes and there's truth and there's connection. So how much of what you do, long story short, whether it's Paul or in general, do you think kind of the farm philosophy can apply to pitching?
Yeah, no, I think the big thing where people I think school does the opposite. I think this is, I'm a little hot take for you. I think school teaches it backwards. And this is what I think the problem is. When you go to school for strength and conditioning or PT, they teach it sub anatomical, like pieces, like, oh, my bicep, my tricep, my this, that, right? Again, great. We break things into pieces like we do nature so that we could better understand nature. But the problem is a lot of times we don't put it all back together.
Again, ecosystem.
Right. Yeah. It's an ecosystem. And so from my perspective, because I did go to school for exercise science. I did take some of these classes in skill acquisition and all these things, but my big education came from outside of school. And what I mean by that is I learned to see patterns, shapes, and like, what I now understand is fascial slings, movement happening from, you know, again, those lenses, and then go into, oh, there's a problem inside of that sling or that movement. Now I go isolate that joint. Now I go and look at how, you know, what's causing this, this, and that. So I kind of start the opposite way of like, you know, I think that's why a lot of PTs are so led astray, in my opinion, and why they, again, will have multiple reoccurring issues is like, let's say someone tears their knee. They go local to the knee and they're like, okay, let's get the hamstring and the quad. And, you know, again, let's work back knee and do all the soft tissue stuff. But meanwhile, the reason they tore their knee really was their hip. And so like, if you don't understand and also their movements and what's causing all that stress on the knee and like all those things, like, yes, the knee was the, you know, like what snapped, right? But it was it's because it had too much, there's not enough stability in the pelvis, right? There's not enough stability in that fascial sling, that global sling that's happening. So like, I don't know how much into like fascial slings and all this stuff, and also audience wise for you, but like, you know, for the same thing there, it's like, think of these massive, you know, rubber bands running across your body and circling around your body in different ways. And, you know, basically if we move certain ways all the time, you know, those fascial slings get tighter or they have more laxity, or, you know, like, let's say when you grow, it's like a plastic bag take a plastic bag and you start stretching it, right? It gets really thin, and yes, it's pliable, but at the same time, it's not very strong. And so like when we go through these growth spurts and things like that, right, our connective tissue gets really stretched. But again, it's also not very strong. And so like, that's where, you know, we need time for that to catch back up, and it helps us with our coordination and helps them with all of our movements. So where I think the crossover is, like you talked about, from hitting to pitching, is that those movements and also those slings and all the work that we're doing is going to strengthen those slings and that connective tissue across our body, because we're doing these repetitive movements over and over and over again with med balls and water bags and, you know, weight, and doing it in the weight room too. And then that was a cool part, is when I was at 108, we had a pitching side, hitting side, and also strength. We called it strength and performance. And so we had that, those three things. And in every room, we were working towards the same things. It's like the same problems they had on the pitching side were what we were seeing on the hitting side. Mm-hmm. The same problems that we were seeing in the hitting, they were also having in the weight room, right? Like, so for example, let's say it's like a hip shift, right? Like, you know, that like every time he goes to a side or anything, he collapses his back hip. Well, guess what? In the hitting side, when he picks his front leg off the ground, his hips collapse. When he goes on the pitching side, as soon as he picks his leg up, his hips collapse. He goes in the weight room and he goes to squat, he's hip shifting. So it's like all these things are happening all the way around, because like that's how their body's put together. So again, along with that, like understanding that, of like seeing things from like a global perspective and a movement perspective, is like, I think like a large part, is it different movements? Like, is pitching hitting? No. But body, the where you need to be strong, and also to how you, some of the sequencing, and also too, along with it, like your decel, like the rubber bands also help us decelerate, right? Like all those connective tissue, all that stuff all works in concert together to like, you know, make movement happen. So to say that there'd be no crossover would be crazy, but also too, to say that it's 100% crossover would also be crazy. So, but I think more than not, there is, yes, a lot of it crosses over. And that's why even too, when people ask, you know, us all the time about pitching, I'm like, hey, like I've been around some really insane pitching coaches in my life. So that's who I compare myself to. And like, no, like a pitching guy can't come over and he's going to be an elite hitting coach, and all, and no, a hitting coach is not going to go over and be an elite pitching coach immediately. But also too, there's so much overlap that a lot of times I can have conversations with them and understand exactly what that. Now I understand it from the body perspective when it comes into actually coaching and cueing, and also all these things that come into like specific for pitching. Well, yeah, the pitching coach is going to be a lot better, right? Mm. But when, if you have a pitching coach that doesn't know about the body, that doesn't know about fascial slings, that doesn't know anatomy, that doesn't know all these other things, right? That obviously, you know, like you're going to have a big leg up just because you understand the body a lot more, the biomechanics and all those things that play, so that you can also, and then also the last thing I would say is the coaching from one side to the other. Coaching in itself is a skill. Right? Your ability to connect with athletes, your ability to create buy-in, your ability for them to trust you, your ability, you know, again, also to cue, your ability to understand how they're seeing movement in their head, and then helping them see it a different way. And also getting to the root cause of like what their intention is within that movement, and helping them get to where they want to go. That crosses over from side to side, or no matter what I'm doing. I could be at a Bible study, or I could be, you know, or I could be in there coaching a player. At the end of the day, like if you go into coaching, like a lot of that overlaps and like is super important.
Yeah. Makes sense to me for sure. And I guess a hot take of mine is like pitchers and hitters as a, you know, college baseball performance coach, it's not that different. They all rotate, they all throw, they're all going to sprint because POs are athletes. I guess that's a hot take. POs are athletes. But it's like, it's the same muscle, same movements ish, just different implements, different amounts during practice and stuff. So it all makes sense to me, you know, kind of just building the base, the rotation base through all of the hitting stuff, and then just applied to pitching. So makes sense to me.
And I think the bigger parts, like you're saying with that, right, too, as well, is like, you know, and then there's also that there's specific skill that comes in, right, where it's like, you know, for example, pitcher, like if you look at ground force, for example, like pitchers push more than hitters do. Like hitters, like, again, you got an open skill compared to a closed skill. One is reactive, the other one is not reactive. So like, for example, in my opinion, on the same side of that, like hitters generally to be able to create like co-contractions that are, they can't, it's very detrimental to a hitter to have a lot of laxity across their body. And like, and a pitcher has more time to pull out that slack, right? They could throw like a haymaker, where like a hitter, they're like a counter puncher, or they're like, you know, they're more of like reactive to something, a stimulus, right? And so that's a very different thing. Even Franz Bosch, when he goes into his understanding of like, you know, co-contractions and how they train and all the water bag stuff and like all these other things, for a hitter is paramount, is your ability to react and also within a very short window of time, create a lot of power. And that is, you know, again, that's, it's a very different thing. It's also more like martial arts than it is like hitting is more like fighting than it is like, you know, like pitching, like, you know. And I would say that that's the biggest difference, is like, is there crossover? For sure. But also to, I compare it to martial arts way more than I do the pitching.
Interesting. Makes sense to me. Yeah. So I will get you out of here. Appreciate you making the time. I love the passion and just when you find topics for people just to go ham on talking about. So I enjoyed you kind of getting into your wheelhouse, and I'm glad we're able to make this happen. So, you know, Joey caught me, and hopefully he can catch you guys too on social and stuff like that. So where can the listeners get more of you, Coach?
Yeah, no, I, again, appreciate it. Yeah, they can, we be out there in all the socials, but usually mine personally is @_JoeyCunha, usually everywhere. And then also too, again, you can go on our website, assistant.farm. We got memberships, a whole bunch of things on there that you guys could check out and dive deeper into courses and 500 plus videos, all these other things. You can dive into resources there. And then also with that as well, right? We're out in Vegas. You guys ever want to come out and hang out with us there? And then all the farm system, basically every single where, all the platforms, your LinkedIn, your TikToks, your, hey, listen, you give us enough time, we might make a MySpace or something. You never know. We'll see.
Jeez, you never know.
But, yeah, but all those all the way around, and yeah, definitely reach out. Love you guys.
Fantastic. So thank you again. Hopefully we will chat soon.
Cool. I appreciate it. Thanks, man.